Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of By the Numbers. I'm your host, Richard Lewis. My co-host is Duncan Thorin Shields. Sam did a really loud countdown for no fucking reason.
Can you hype me? Get everyone ready?
Just scared me, honestly. Just needlessly
loud.
The real reason is
because I know you two talk during the countdown, so I'm just making sure I'm not ruining anyone's careers. 3, 2, 1.
Yeah. Well, that is where we say all the best bits, isn't
exactly.
it, Duncan?
Exactly.
That's how we roll. How are you doing, mate? You good?
Yeah, not bad. Half bad.
Go on. I'm waiting for a story, at least. Give me something.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, I'll tell you what. You know what? Yeah, it's the point of this show, Rich, is to just say how things are. Mm. So, right, this tournament I went to, you might not have known this because I actually was not aware of it because they did a bad job publicising the premise of the tournament. Like, I thought this tournament, the V4 Future Sports Festival, was just a Tier 2 tournament that had a couple of Tier 1 teams. I thought, right, it's one of those events where, you know, a couple of teams have seen the money and said, right, I'm in. And then, you know, some of the bigger teams have skipped it. And then you've got a couple of okay teams. And then you've got the local teams. It turned out, right, the actual premise was that every team at the event has to have a player who comes from one of these four countries: Slovakia, Czech Republic, Poland, or Hungary. So, so it turns out that's what every team has. So, you know, like FaZe has Guardian, and then, you know, Mouse Sports has Sticko and Oscar, Hellraisers, obviously Virtus Pro are all Polish. Now, the reason I bring this up is because I just thought I was going to a normal tournament. But when I got there, not only did every fucking person who works in that staff, one of the first things they'd ask me, so how do you like how do you like Hungary? And I'd just be going, really? let's just figure out how to not lie. I haven't really had a lot of chance to look around, you know, like just kind of literally trying to figure out my brain. Now I'm never going to be dishonest, mate. I'm never going to say it's wicked. And so I'm just going, they go, do you try any of the food? I go, yeah. What food is? I'm not that. Just saying stuff. Nah, I'm kind of a bit picky, you know. So just had a burger and that. But and then they go, oh, you got to try the goulash. What's that like?
Yeah.
It's a sort of a stew.
Stew, yeah, it's classic.
Yeah, I've had poor people's food in every other country, mate. Didn't say that. I thought that in my own mind. I grew up on that, you know. Why would I say that? So anyway, you can already tell that's already putting me a little bit on edge. Basically, yeah. Just as a little memo to the world, apparently I haven't done a good enough job getting this out there. I don't care about your narcissism that your country is brilliant. If you hire me to talk about Counter-Strike, just stick to the Counter-Strike, mate. I'm not there to make you validate the idea you live somewhere good.
Yeah, but
the best I'll give you is you live somewhere all right.
So hang on. I thought it was in Budapest.
Right. All I'm going to tell you is this, Richard.
Yeah.
When I go to events... Nowadays, I don't even just go and do the work like everyone else does and chill out otherwise. Like, if I can, I try and do my talk shows because I have like 4 talk shows or something I'm obligated to do each week.
Yeah, you are stretching yourself a little bit thin in that.
But the difference is, that's worked everywhere I've been so far. Everywhere has, you know, all right, internet. Remember, you don't need much to host a Skype call. Basically, just needs to be stable. Doesn't even need to be like super powerful. The hotel internet in this hotel was so insanely bad. And apparently, even in like the player hotel, it was equally bad. Like, couldn't even like maintain a Skype connection. I was using my phone half the weekend, mate. It was so I can't handle being in a place for 5 days that already is not fucking Tokyo. It's not some metropolis that they want to believe it is. It's just got a fucking Woolworths or something. That's like their version of being fucking... And then I haven't got any internet either. And then on top of that, I'm coming in and you're asking me if I've had some of your food. Who are you? Fucking 3 bears or something, you daft cunt. I'll eat what I'm eating and give me the internet.
I've been to Budapest. I fucking loved it out there. I had a
Here's the thing,
time.
Rich. It is
I didn't go out there for the internet.
Doing shows over it,
No. Here's the thing. It definitely is better than like I mean, Ukraine, etc. Because like, put it this way, the standard of living's clearly higher, and it seemed all right. It's just that stuff like that triggers me, mate. You know what I'm like with my food, with the internet.
Yes, I'm afraid I do.
Lights in my eyes, all the classics.
Yeah. There cannot be any loud, high-pitched noises. There cannot be lights in your eyes. There must be a selection of candy. You must have a sugar-free rock star at approximately 10 a.m. Yeah. I have worked with you for so long that I know your conditions. You know?
You've already just set me off there again, because one day, right, I came in.
No bloody rock star.
7:30 a.m. call time.
Oof.
Oh, by the way, call time, not set your alarm for 7:30. So yeah. Let's just get rid of those for a start off, please, in esports. Secondly, okay, fair enough, I'm here, 7:30. Someone does the old bait and switch. They say, do you want us to get you some breakfast? I go, yeah, sure. What have you got? They go, oh, we're just going to get some pizzas. I go, yeah, that sounds all right, actually. When I left 4 hours later, there was no pizzas there. So now you're actually blocking me getting food because I think a pizza's coming. Are you trying to fuck with me? Do you want to end up like Poland? Because this is how you get like Poland, okay? Well, look, all you need to know is that I was doing my bit. I was like a fucking Buddhist monk out there. Just taking moments before I spoke.
Good for you, though. Good. That shows personal growth.
I was doing my best.
Yeah, good for you.
Because here's the thing, like I said, I'm not going to lie and just be like, yeah, it's wicked here, love it. Oh, fucking brilliant, you know. Come on, you've got to be real. You've got to be real, haven't you?
Well, like you say, every time I've been to Budapest, and I had a great time. So I'm just putting that out. But I've never worked an event and never tried to do a talk show via Skype. So perhaps my views would be different if those things...
We have different priorities.
Yeah, exactly. We certainly do. So look, man, do you want to talk about the event first off? I was going to do the news and then the event.
Yeah, let's just cycle back again. I just need to get that out of my system. You know?
No, all right. Well, okay. We'll get that out of your system and we'll do the news and then we'll come back to talking about Budapest, your favorite city. So big story, I suppose, this week is Taco leaving SK Gaming. You know, crazy. Like, we all knew that there was something not quite right in SK Gaming. Yeah. We weren't quite sure how it was going to go. We suspected that there would be roster changes. But this is one of the greatest core lineups we've ever had in Counter-Strike, really, not just CSGO. Taco is a player who... It's incredible to think how shit he actually was at one point. Like, if you rewind in time... I think right about the time he was raging at Simple in FPL or whatever it was, Taco was actually awful. I mean, he was stupefyingly bad, didn't really seem to even be a basic role player or support player in that sense. And he went through various iterations, you know, at points he was the entry fragger, then he was like a support player. You know, he really showed his versatility and raised his level to be instrumental, actually, in the success that SK Gaming achieved. It's quite an amazing story in that regard. But just lately, obviously, we know SK Gaming haven't been firing on all cylinders, and I think Taco hasn't either. And the way it was framed, of course, was that, you know, we need to make these changes, and Taco hasn't been enjoying it anymore, and Taco is going to graciously stand down.
That triggered me already.
You
know how these things are, Rich.
Oh, of course, I know. There is no fucking...
It's like a mutual breakup, isn't it? Oh, yeah, we were both going in different directions. In other words, you want to fuck other people and you have no choice but to say yes. Yeah. You know, it's the same scenario, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's fine. You know, I have no issue with it. I mean, I think you're absolutely on point. The idea that Taco just decided to benevolently step down because he wasn't enjoying it anymore, while simultaneously the organization were like, oh, he's a bloody legend. Look how great this guy is. Meanwhile, we are definitely replacing him, though. Like, it doesn't really line up, does it, with reality? Yeah,
they actually said the same thing when Phelps left the team. They claimed, oh yeah, the pressure was getting to him, so he actually asked to leave. Fuck off. And you just coincidentally wanted him out and had a player lined up who was going to be better, and instantly were better the next tournament. Like, these are the sort of people where it's like, you know, when the government's like, yeah, we bloody made a mistake, haven't we? We're all rich because of it, but fuck it, those mistakes. It's like, I don't believe you, unsurprisingly.
Yeah. I think it's kind of interesting. So, I mean, first of all, I'll ask you for your thoughts on making that cut. Was he the guy to go, in your opinion? I mean, the problem you've got with SK Gaming is the roster is so fundamentally good. Obviously, Fallen can't go, Cold Zero can't go, Fur can't go, and Bolt's just joined. Like, there really isn't anywhere else you can go if you need to trim any fat. And unfortunately, I think Taco would have been bulletproof on almost any other roster, you know? I mean, that's my assessment of it, at least.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that makes perfect sense. This is one of the problems you get to when you get to a level like this where your core's had so much success. And as you say, everyone has their role set. I mean, like, you can't really rationalize your brain around how you're going to cut, like, Fur or something, can you? It doesn't really matter even if he has a dip in form. He can't do it. So, unfortunately, yeah, I think it had to be tackled just logically with who was left in the squad. And you add in, even within the context of his role, he did have some last tournaments these last few months that were fucking pretty ropey, you know. I think he, even within the context of what he did, which was never supposed to be like fragging, obviously, he still had some tournaments where it just looked a bit crap. And so, Like, I mean, there's a part of me sees the angle of like, why would you do it? Because, like, I mean, I've always wondered what would happen if Cold Zero plays without tackle. It seemed like an integral part of Cold Zero's success, yeah, you know?
Absolutely. And Fallen as well. You know, he kind of remind me a little bit of the relationship that happened initially with, you know, when Carrigan brought Kiyoshima back from the dead. And he was kind of like, listen, you know, are you a star player? No. Are you going to get primo positions? No. But you are going to be my fucking tool to get things done on the server. And the way they stood by Taco at his lowest ebb, his career worst form, when clearly he looked out of his depth at an elite level, kind of made you feel that the guy was bulletproof to a certain degree. But that being said, I guess no one really is at the end of the day. And we said it on the last episode. SK Gaming, and Fallen in particular, he's a guy who, if it's not working, he will make the most savage, ruthless cuts to get back to being number one. That's all he really gives a fuck about, is winning them tournaments.
Which I respect, by the way. I mean, even these moves here, they're massive gambles, but at this point in time, you've got to do something drastic, right? You're not even making the playoffs of WESG.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think WESG was a real, like, nadir for the team. It's such a low point in their career that, you know, it almost felt inevitable that they would make some cuts. So what I will say is he did have an awesome twit longer that he put out when he left. It's probably a bit too long to read it all. It sort of like meanders out into a poem at the end, where he says, to my teammates, Cold Zero, Dead, Cammy, Fallen, Fur, and Bolts, thank you very much for everything, for each learning and teaching, for every smile and cry, which we know in Brazil is free, of course, for every fight and happy moments. You fucking love a meme, mate. You love a meme. For every fight and happy moments, for every conversation and advice, for every long flights and sleepless nights, for every complaint and every problem solved, for every revolt and patience.
It's just all like lyrics or something, doesn't it?
Yeah. For every chapter of our story, for always believing in me, until now, I've always believed in you too. I leave today leaving my mark and legacy in between these 27 months, 13 trophies, 21 finals, 10 semifinals. I leave with no regrets, no anger, no remorse. I leaving the doors open. Thank you very much for everything. With love. So, you know, it's a fucking straight fire way to sign out. The question, I guess, is now, where the fuck does he go from this point? Because I think he's too good a player to be in fucking free agency. Well, I think he's too good a player to be going to some second string.
Here's
Brazil
the thing,
team.
Rich. This is also why it's not plausible that he actively wants to leave the team. If someone wanted to leave the team, right, bear in mind, this is like the best team you could ever be on, basically. You know, they're one of the most successful as well. If you leave a team like that for real, you're going to at least take a few months off. You're going to go, right, I need some time to recover. No, what he did is instantly, Rich, tweet out that he's going to be practicing English as much as possible and be playing a lot of FPL games. That's like just putting a sign out, like, I literally want to play for a top team, and obviously there's no one left in Brazil. So please, Mouse Sports Fears, Optic, everyone out there, I am available. May I just reiterate, I am available.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think I've talked to Taco. I think there's a misconception, because me and him have had a little few swipes at each other, and I'm sure you, and, you know, he's an emotional guy, he speaks his mind, and obviously we're similar. You know, we definitely speak our mind. You know, you're not going to get invited to the Budapest fucking tourist board anytime soon. So, you know, I think there's a misconception there that we, you know, don't like the guy or don't admire his talents or whatever. I've actually talked to him in person. He's a really, you know, chill dude, like, to be around. And yeah, I disagree with some of his takes on things like the embarrassing hat debacle and, you know, the sort of culture of excuses he's been a part of in the past. But there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that he could go to a top American team. And first of all, his English would be more than sufficient. And second of all, he'd pretty much enrich almost any of the NA teams, I would say.
Well, the funny thing is, I've always said, Rich, this is what I've told so many NA players, is that their scene doesn't have any support players.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's true. I mean, everyone
needs to be these are the roles they need, isn't it? They've got all the fraggers they need. They always have had. That's what's so stupid. Just that they never made proper squads about them. They kept doing like what Team Liquid's done the last 2 years, where you keep stacking what were your old star players with new star players, and then you wonder why you don't win the game.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Like, somebody said this, didn't they? Was it Lerpa said this just this week? Tweeted out saying that the NA problem is that
Everyone was from Tacos AMA. He tweeted that, yes.
Yeah, from Tacos AMA. And he literally said, you know, that there's a problem. The problem in NA is that nobody really wants to do the dirty work for the team. And they say they will, but when it comes to playing, they don't do it.
That's the key part, yes. There's plenty of people will claim they will. But again, actually, funnily enough, I could tie it into the scenario I talked about with Tackle leaving the team. The ones who say they will are the people where really it's been put to them. Us three have got the star roles. You do want to be in this team, don't you? Oh, yep. I'll be the support player. I'll do whatever you need. I'll throw flashes and do all. Like, you don't, your heart's not in it, though, isn't it? You're only doing that to be on Cloud9 or Team Liquid or whatever. If you had your choice, you'd be the star player and you'd have someone else doing that role. So it's clearly not ideal to have anyone doing a role they don't really want to do. That's one of the reasons why, for me, people like Taco, Apex, in their own way, they are worth their weight in gold because they actually want to do that role. Like, Apex is actually so fucked in the head. He likes to run in, die, and then be blamed for having shit stats in the game when some other country baits him. He actually likes that in a mad sense.
I've seen lots of players sort of fall into that, and it's so fucking strange to me when they do that. They're like, well, I'm doing my job. This is great. You know, it's a culture that never seems to go
over. In a way, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They're fucking soldiers. They do what they're fucking told. It's a culture that never really worked in NA, you know? Like, I mean, in that respect, I suppose we always do give Skadoodle a hard time, really, because Skadoodle's one of the few players I see where it's like, he's the support AWPer, which always seems oxymoronic to me, that you've got the most impactful position, potentially, doing all the support work for the team. But I guess at least he rolls his fucking sleeves up and does it, right? With mixed results. I see you smiling. So I have no idea where Taco's going to go. I think there'll definitely be offers, but it's going to be interesting. That one is wide open. And we've already had a bit of a silly season when it comes to transfers.
Here's the sick thing, Rich. I'm not joking when I say this. People are going to think this is an outrageous statement. If I was a team like FaZe, I would actually consider getting Taco.
Well, who would you replace?
I'd kick like all off my Strassman, mate. The thing with that team is they've got all the stars. They're another team. I mean, they're the most extreme version. Like, they have players right now who on their own would be the fucking best player in the world. But they neutralize themselves by the fact they don't have a team. Like, they do an amazing job with it. Like, for me, Carrigan is, I think, I love it that people are picking Carrigan as the guy to bash on, by the way. He's basically running a fucking, the most best FPL team ever in real tournaments and making every semi-final ever. That, I'm calling all the strats on the fly. That's fucking amazing. No one can do that. Now, I agree, he isn't winning the titles, but that's what I mean. My problem for FaZe is every time they come to the point where you win with teamwork or you win with, like, people having something to fall back on, that's when they got fuck all. And it just goes to shit and they pray someone shoots everyone in the head, which isn't a way to win in Counter-Strike. Like, you think of all those SK tournaments where they were in a close round and they overcame it. They didn't do it by just one person running out and killing everyone, you know. They usually did it with, like, a really ballsy strat that they were able to execute, or they had a hold on CT side where everyone played their role and covered every angle, you know. That's why, in a weird way, yeah, I agree, Taco's not a skilled player, but the difference is I could see him making someone like a Nico even more effective, or bolstering that core so that when you have to fall back on something, you know what, he will run in first to let someone bait him to get the opening kill, to trade, to get on the site. That's what I mean. Like, to me, I could see it as a missing piece. It'd be a big gamble, don't get me wrong, but it's the sort that, again, if I'm FaZe, who also is in a weird rut, I might do that move.
Well, we're going to talk about FaZe a little bit later, obviously, when we get to the Budapest issue. So I'll cycle through this news quickly, because I'm certainly intrigued by what happened out there and this continual issue that FaZe seems to be having. You'll remember as well, at the time we did the last show, there was a lot of talk about Simple and Flamey potentially going to SK Gaming. We were like, we couldn't believe it was going to happen. Then it started to get traction and be reported as if it was a matter of fact. You saw Nell and DK pick up that there were certainly advanced talks. Those talks fell through for reasons that I'm not quite sure what they would be. I don't know how you would get to the point where it's being leaked to the press. Simple's tweeting things like, yes. And you had just one word as if to say the rumors are true. He's a mad fucker, him, isn't he? But obviously you had the problems with WESG, so it looked like the talks were ongoing at that point. So everything came together nicely to make it look like it was actually genuine.
By the way, Think about how that changes now, how you think about that scenario. Mm-hmm. So both Simple and Flamey, obviously playing for different countries, Ukraine and Russia, both coincidentally couldn't attend WASG because of personal reasons and being burned out, and then magically, immediately afterwards, tied with a move to a totally different org.
Yeah. Fuck right off.
Again, how many coincidences do you guys need? There's like a famous saying, right, that says a coincidence is what happens when you apply a bad theory.
Yeah. So it was a strange one. And then I saw this interview with Simple, which I'll bring up with Sam here. Because keep in mind, we've joked about it on the show. You know, Simple signed that 2-year contract when he was saying, oh, I don't know where my future lies. This team's clearly underperforming. It's always going to underperform in its current format. There's no way a team with Zeus and Edward is ever going to bother. You know, they had their chance to win a tournament at Star Ladder. It's done now. That was it. That was it for 2018. You've got to get rid of one. And if we're saying Zeus is a tactical mastermind, of which I've seen little evidence, the Gambit anomaly notwithstanding, then it's got to be Edwards. They cannot win a tournament with this roster, in my opinion. Maybe some scrub tier, small one, yes, but not a major tournament by any stretch of the imagination. But anyway, Simple did this interview saying, now is not the time to leave. I mean, this is a player who's still under a pretty long fucking contract. And let me tell you when the time to leave is, when the org says you can, Simple. I mean, that's the first thing here. You literally fucking put the handcuffs on and said, yeah, lock them up. You won't do them too tight, will you? Up 2 years, agony, my arms, my wrists. Like, he literally fucking just did that to himself. I don't know why. I'm guessing he doesn't have an agent or representation, or that could never have happened. But he did this interview. It was more like a post on VK.com, I should say. And he said, it is not the time to leave with all the goals we have set. My journey is not finished yet. So again, everyone seems to be doing rhyming couplets this fucking podcast, right? So listen, this is
more like a fucking Dr. Seuss, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit more basic than tacos, I got to say. But you know, he's younger, so. So anyway, look, he puts this post out there, and like the one thing I will say about Simple is I know how much the Na'Vi brand means to him. Like he grew up, like he always said, if you people who don't know this, Markelov was his personal hero growing up. Obviously, when they played alongside each other, that relationship didn't quite work out. They say you should never meet your idols, eh, Duncan? But he said, I used to watch his demos all the time. He made me the player I am by like just observation. And to play for Na'Vi, this legendary brand that had the likes of Markelov play for it, is a big deal to me. So I think that definitely gives you a little bit of kind of value in sticking around. But this back and forth, I think mentally Simple had tuned out, did want to go. And then for whatever reason, be it financially or Na'Vi digging their heels in, because he's contracted till the end of 2019, there was just no realistic way they were going to go. And we saw some insane amounts being talked about for the buyout for players. So what did you make of this situation? Were Simple and Flamey, did they have one foot out the door in your mind?
Based on what I know and then speculation, yeah. I think this was a done deal on all parts except the money. For me, Simple and Flamey definitely were done. Like the only reason, let's be real, the only way Flamey's involved in this equation is clearly Simple wanted him with him and didn't want to just be alone with all the Brazilian players and not have someone from his region with him, you know, especially because presumably they'd have to live in NA. So it's a big risk to do it, but at least if you take someone with you that you have some sort of history with, you know. If you've noticed, as a teammate, Flamey's a very quiet teammate. So I could see him being the one that Simple gets along with, you know. He probably doesn't have any beef with him. But to me, yeah, he clearly wanted to go. Clearly, SK wanted him. If I had to guess, Na'Vi wanted too much money or they couldn't agree on some element of the terms. You know, by the way, whoever got that signature, it was late last year, if you remember. I think it was just before they got electronic. Whoever got him to sign for the 2 years there, you should be like fucking executive of the year or something. Because if you'd have fucked that up, he would be got. You would have lost the best player in the world and you would have nothing in your team right now. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. So here's where it gets interesting. I think, like you say, you know, one foot out the door, sure. But there might be more to this. There might be a political element going on. Because, of course, we do remember that ES Force used to own the media rights for Na'Vi, as well as owning SK Gaming.
For the small fee of $10 million.
Yeah, for the small fee of $10 million, so definitely a reasonable amount of money to pay. So we know ES Force obviously owns this, you know, like trifecta teams. Na'Vi was one of them, Virtus Pro's the other, SK Gaming's the other. And apparently, when Na'Vi went their own separate ways, because they're now owned by Zero Gravity Holdings, which is a holding group created by the manager Zero Gravity, pure unbridled narcissism.
Just get me out of this fucking shell company hell. They are now owned by A1 Abstractions LLC coming out of Hong Kong. Help me.
Yeah, I know. It was like when the CPL brand got passed around like fucking, you know, herpes at an orgy, and everybody had a fucking piece of CPL, and it was at one stage owned by, like, what was it, Wulong Holdings?
Yeah, someone from, like, Asia, yeah.
Yeah, it was like Wulong Holdings.
Which sounds like the fucking company out of Alien or something.
Yeah, exactly. Wutani, yeah. So ridiculous. Anyway, so yeah, shell company hell. Because I don't understand how the transfer got so advanced to the point where it literally looked like it was done.
Yeah.
It was being reported as being done, and then bang, and then all of a sudden, now, they're doing trials. So, yes. So just some final thoughts about this one. Is it a missed opportunity for SK Gaming? I think it would have been an issue, because it's like you say, if they are going to go and play under this MIBR brand, I don't understand where Flamey and Simple really fit into that vision, but, you know, whatever.
First of all, I actually agree with, like, the way you broke it down there. That's, like, my logic. Like, if I had to guess, I would think that what happened is, right, first of all, this is why I've called this guy out before, but I'll do it again. This is why when that PH DeMarc or whatever, the guy from North, come out, and they always are very careful with their phrasing, and they say something like, we are not in official negotiations, this is a lie. No, what happens is your players contact the player first to find out if he wants to play with them or not. There's no poaching rule in CSGO, remember? So it's not like League of Legends where that couldn't happen. So what happens is the first stage of every single team in the world making a player change is players decide between themselves what the change is. Then they get the orgs involved because, yeah, you need the contracts. You need to get people out of contracts. You need to get them into your team. Now, if I had to guess, knowing some of the people, some of the prime actors involved in this one, I wouldn't even be surprised if the Na'Vi guys purposely said, yeah, we're open to this, Simple wants to do it, you know, let's talk. And then what they did purposely is let it get to the very point where you have to agree on the number and then make the number as high as possible. So at that point, SK is, you know, they're all in. It's like, oh, if we're going to do it, and this is vaguely possible, we'll do it. Because this actually reminds me, funnily enough, of what happens in football now, where what happens is, you know, if you have like a Real Madrid, they'll always say, no, it's not for sale, the best player. But if you really just like put 20 million more than they really thought he's worth on,
they'll
always sell him. Yeah. So for me, I don't even blame Na'Vi entirely, by the way. They've got it Simple banked rights. He's under contract for 2 years. Again, if he leaves, doesn't matter how much money you get. That's not actually helping you make a better team. There's no saying even if you get 2 million. Now that'll buy you the gambit players that it would take to make this a world-class team. So at this point, I mean, it's a bit outrageous probably what they asked for. It does sound like it's in line with what you're suggesting, but I could sort of see it. I mean, I can't blame them. And then in terms of SK, I will say, first of all, this entire thing, like, it's one thing if they were just going to get Simple and Flamey and that was the move, right? But this thing spiraled out of control afterwards, where, no joke, they've been asking like every fucking good player. This smacks of like desperation in a way I never thought I'd see from this squad. Like, I thought they, you know, it's one thing if like, let's say you can get Simple, right? Yeah, you would gamble on that. Okay, let's say if you could get Shox or Rain. Like, again, I could see the gamble. When you're just asking everyone, and even worse, when everyone's saying, nah, thanks. It's getting a bit sad now, isn't it?
Yeah. So look, then next up, okay, because that deal seemed to fall through at the 11th hour when it was done. Then we saw DK, you know, our endemic reporter, the guy with the finger on the pulse. He put out a report that Stewie2K is going to be going to SK Gaming now, that they turned their attention to him, and maybe it wasn't going to be a double swoop, although it was kind of reported that Stewie wanted Automatic to come along, which kind of suggests that, I mean, it would have to be Bolts who would get demoted to sixth, right? So, which I think they're a fantastic pairing, definitely work well with each other, but apparently Automatic didn't want to go, but Stewie definitely does. I'm guessing Stewie's got to that point in his career where he's thinking, you know, maybe that major was a bit of an anomaly. Do I?
Funny how that works, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, will I win another one in Cloud Nine? Perhaps not. And like one thing I'll definitely say about Stewie is, ever since he burst onto the scene, he's always been ambitious. He's obviously very much driven to win trophies. Wants to, you know, will do whatever it takes to win. You can see him being a very good foil for somebody like Fallen to get that extra dimension out of. Not that, you know, Stewie 2K isn't an incredibly highly polished player. But if he could be taken to yet another level, I think we're looking at one of the best all-round players in the world. So anyway, SK Gaming were in roster talks about adding Stewie 2K, which sort of came out of left field for me. I'll just add this before I get your thoughts as well. Whatever the buyout would be, and I imagine we would probably be talking about $1 million for Stewie 2K if we go on market value.
He's also, remember, just signed a contract. I believe after the major, signed everyone again for a year or two, right?
Yeah, they literally just signed after the major. That's correct. So put this into context. Whatever he sells, if Stewie 2K does go, whatever they sell him for is going to be stellar business. One of the best asset flips in all of
Counter-Strike. Oh, now's the time to do it as well.
Yeah, they got him for $20,000 from Splice. So
only like 2 years ago as well.
Yeah. So I think Jack would be laughing all the way to the fucking bank here. But what do you think of it? First of all, do you think the move is likely? Do you think it's a good one? And you know, can Cloud9 afford to lose their talismanic player?
Right, to tie it back into what I said before, when you hear moves like this get reported, and especially with terminology like it's almost a done deal, what that means is everyone involved does want the deal to happen. Now, whether they can agree to terms, that's obviously the other part of it. But that whenever a story like that leaks, that means both the player who would be leaving and joining the team and the team who want him to join are in. Now, whether it can happen, the businessmen have to decide that, and sometimes they can't. But as a result, I would assume it is going to happen. In terms of the move itself, right, first of all, I'll put this right up front because you can't ignore this. It has to be part of the story. A team like SK, I don't know what the new Cloud9 contract is. I don't know if they got bumped up in salary for winning the major or what. But knowing what Jack, I mean, you saw a news today where he was saying like, it has to franchise. I'll tell you what that's code for. Someone like Jack can get a literal infinite amount of money into esports if he wants. But there has to be a reason to do it. So he isn't just going to pump all of his C9 players up to the same salary as Virtus Pro for no reason. Why would he do that? It's not good business. So as far as I know, at least from the past contracts, teams like Cloud9 don't make anywhere close to what SK Gaming makes. So I can't ignore that for a young player. If you can not only join, in theory, a better team and get paid, who knows, 3-4 times more money, yeah, obviously you'd do it. Like, that's the, I have to go ahead and say that. I have to be practical. But I will say, I mean, I can't blame Stu 2K for this. He wasn't the one who said it, but it does piss me off a bit that people do act as though, like, this is Cloud9's time. They're the best team now. They've won the major. Even the players in it don't believe that you fucking reamed out. You know, like, even Automatic in my interview didn't believe that, you know, like, it's only you fans who believe that. What's funny is some players can be a bit stubborn on these things, but a lot of them actually have a fairly reasonable perception of where they and their team are in the world, you know. And you saw when Cloud9 had these results recently, right? Here's the difference. They're having results where they get 5th-8th, and they don't talk about splitting the whole team up like a FaZe or an SK would if they get that sort of point, because they understand that's actually not, that's like just one level below where you'd expect. Semis is about what you expect from them at the moment. So I think it's a pretty realistic move all around. Whether it would work, that's a tough one to know, because Stewie 2K is clearly a talented player.
Yeah, and if it's a like-for-like replacement with Taco,
that doesn't make sense, obviously.
Yeah. So you
know, as you've seen, if you were going to get simple anyway, I think you've already committed to the idea that the old core didn't work and it's trying to reformulate. I mean, funnily enough, I think all these moves, by the way, first of all, removing Taco, which was clearly like a key part of Cold Zero's game, and adding other star players, you're almost saying this isn't a Cold Zero team anymore. He's going to be one of the star players. Maybe he's going to be like Reyna's in FaZe, you know, he can have tournaments, he's sick, but maybe it's going to be a different look, SK, which I think will be cool. It's a big gamble, but you've got to do something at this point in time. That there was something wrong with that core, I'm afraid.
Yeah, definitely. And this just coming in sort of adds weight to the Stewie 2K report. Obviously, DK literally just posted some red hot fire while we were on air, and you know, we do this show fucking live, so we're gonna address it.
Okay.
His sources say that Taco is likely to replace Stewie 2K. So Stewie 2K goes to SK, okay. Taco comes the other direction. Probably as a make weight. So this is an interesting deal in and of itself.
you know, that in itself, though, Rich, that in itself makes me think that that's part of the business side, though, which is like, okay, you know what? You're asking a lot in this buyout. So how about this? If I give you Taco, he's got his contract still. Yeah. Can I get third off it or something? That would be the sort of deal it would make sense to me, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a make weight. There's no doubt about that. But I think it kind of makes me wonder a little bit if they've thought about the shape of the team and like sort of where that, because Taco, they don't need a Taco, in my opinion. I don't see that as necessarily a great move for Cloud9, other than you get some money for Stewie and you do get a player. So you're not having to go out and buy another player on top, right? But honestly, Taco is not a like-for-like replacement for Stewie. And Stewie is such a big part of their firepower. You know, it puts immense pressure on Rush, I think, to sort of step up and be who he was when he was at Optic. And we don't know if maybe it's a space issue because Stewie occupies that space and similar positions that Rush has been a little bit tepid and not and maybe in the absence of Stewie, Rush can definitely get to where he is. But if he doesn't, I would really worry about this team in terms of firepower. I have no idea what a Cloud9 minus Stewie plus Taco would actually look like and how it would perform at tournaments. My guess is that they would certainly be relinquishing the number one in an A title to Team Liquid. I couldn't see that five beating Team Liquid unless, as I said, Rush was to go back to his God tier status when he was in Optic. Is that a fair assessment in your mind?
Yeah, because the big concern for me is under the Tarek leadership, they have really gone back to the scrimmy style of play. They don't really run a lot of tactics, it doesn't look like. So to me, the problem is if you want a Taco, it's because you're moving towards more of a structure, in my opinion, you know. Because if you think about it, just think of the team he just played in now. The reason he could get away without fragging is because he had monsters like Caldera and Fur going ham every game. So if you put him into Cloud9, for me, one of the reasons why their major win wasn't going to be replicated is because they kind of did it by committee, you know. They didn't really have a superstar at that tournament, you know. They had four people who all sort of took a turn at the right map or the right point in time and collectively pushed you over the line with that. You know, the sum was the equivalent of if you'd had the star player and then the secondary player and the AWPer who does a bit of this here. So that's the biggest problem I see is that you put Taco in, your firepower consideration is already a bit off kilter. Now you'd think to yourself, right, well, you can offset that if you're really tactical or stuff. Well, they're not going to really do that, are they? So I don't really see the move make a lot of sense in that regard. And they've also got Skadoodle, who's been a dead weight at times. So it puts more pressure on all the parts, in my opinion. Like, you're right, if Rush became amazing again, Automatic's already pretty good. Okay, we're starting to get there, but these are already a load of ifs before we've done first game, you know?
Yeah. So that'll be interesting. Going to follow that story. Definitely adds weight to the Stewie 2K to SK Gaming move. On top of that, what else have we had going on? I mean, I did want to say there was kind of this weird, almost perverse, like, amusement being taken in that clearly SK Gaming are a little bit all over the place and they want to buy star power and spend some money, but they obviously don't care as long as it is just star power. Yes. Right. Now, I thought it was interesting because I saw Fallen kind of saying publicly like, oh, hey, who are we getting today? As if these reports were completely unfounded. I never really like it. I suppose it's fine. It's a little bit playful. It's not like he's calling anyone a liar. But there is an implication in the tweets kind of saying, oh, look at all these reports about us, eh? As if no one's right. And obviously all these things are happening behind the scenes.
The implication, by the way, quite clearly was that, you know, all these names being mentioned, like, oh, who are you going to mention today? Yeah. Who are you going to get, you fucking mess? You're the one who's literally like, you're now going to the fucking lunch, lady. Would you come to the prom with me? Get your fucking shit together, mate. The joke's on you.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. Like, I love you. Love you, brother. But yeah, I agree with you, dog. I'm like, fucking, you know, where are we at with this? Like, it's a different name every fucking day, you know, and I believe all these talks are fucking happening. So you can mock the press reporting it as much as you want, but it clearly shows that you actually don't have a clear vision beyond, shit, better get some big names, you know? And they had a little back and forth with Gambit today.
You know, by the way, what's rich about that as well? Here's the thing. From what we said earlier in the episode, this is totally in keeping with what Fallon's done in his career. Like, he knows they need some drastic change, probably big firepower to change the squad, make them world best again. Okay, I'm on board with that. But that's not the way they've ever sold it. They've always sold it as like, oh, so proud of being Brazilian. There was even a comment I saw today where apparently like their manager had claimed, oh, there's a dozen Cold Zeras out there in Brazil just grinding. Just pick one up then, mate. It sounds like it'll be free. Just get yourself another Cold Zero. What's that? You literally are not interested in anyone else Brazilian.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, a lot of people took the I'm a pet tweet seriously about KNG.
That was so obvious. This is the thing, Rich. I've told you this before. I've never seen if there's like a study on this, but there's got to be some sort of correlation between like humor and intelligence, because the thickest fucks can never tell when someone's joking. Mm. It's mad, isn't it?
Like, there's simply no way on God's green earth. Because, again, think about it, right? SK Gaming isn't really SK Gaming. We all know it. It's going to be a Noah Winston-controlled project very soon. Noah's in Brazil right now doing fucking interviews with the press. And the Immortals Twitter feed just tweeted out their jerseys in Brazil's colors. Get with the fucking times. So you tell me why the fucking CEO who originally cut KNG for not meeting the values of the organization and go, fucking hell, well, we're desperate for talent again. I'll just bring back that fucking guy that I kicked and caused a big drama about, and no one will call me out on that bullshit. That could never backfire. There's no fucking way. So clearly that was a fucking joke. But yeah, I agree with your point. I think what Fallen is saying is, right now, there isn't anyone in Brazil that meets the SK Gaming standard. And that's pretty damning, actually.
It is, isn't it?
When it comes from Fallen, because Fallen's the guy who took a chance on the likes of fucking Taco and guys like that to bring them in, made some harsh cuts again, as he's known for doing. So it's very interesting that Fallen feels the need to kind of look further afield. Anyway,
you know what my theory on that would be, though? I've got a quick theory craft. This is not that I know anything about. This is not based on any private information. But the reason why that move's so bizarre, though, because like, yes, he's done the moves before that were the harsh cuts, but this smacks of desperation more than just him. Like, I don't think, because here's the thing, from the outside, you think, right, it's just because they've had such a bad year so far, they want to get back to number one instantly. They don't want to wait. They don't want to build and have to work with something. No, if I had to guess, I actually reckon that all the bad things that have happened in this team mean it was close to fracturing, and they were going to lose a Fur or a Cold Zera, and one of these guys either was going to leave or maybe just quit entirely. I mean, think of how many times you've heard that Fur's like, I don't play the game for fun, you know, I just play when it's officials. They've even told, as Taco said that in the AMA, that after Star Series in 2017, they thought about splitting the team up. So we know there've been times in the past where basically winning is what has held them together, and when it doesn't look like they can win anymore, people start to sort of move apart from each other. So this sort of move from Fallen, which seems uncharacteristically desperate to me, suggests it's like, unless you can sort of make the blockbuster trade that keeps everyone here now, someone will be out the door.
Yeah. So interesting times. I'm sure we've got some more big announcements to come. We all know teams like to wait until Wednesday to fuck with everyone, because straight fire by the numbers.
It's mad,
comes
isn't
out
it? How many
Tuesday.
Times that's happened?
Yeah, I know. It's going to happen again.
More rats.
Yeah, as sure as Swedes triggering Turkish fans by using auto snipers. Shout out to Godsent, by the way. So look, let's talk about
one. Oh, you mean the new one? Yeah, the one.
Yeah.
That's good. Everyone should do it. I told you, on the show, everyone.
Yeah, every time you're playing Space Soldiers from now on, pros, get those auto snipers out, start banging fucking heads off, and drive those Turkish fans nuts. Sometimes the only way to teach people a lesson is to put them in a hell of their own creation and make it last. Till they're sick of the sight of auto snipers. That's it. They'll never say anything again after that. But anyway. Let's talk about Budapest and what went on. So I was like you, dude. I was like, oh, thank God for that. We got a little break, you know, just got some online CS in the background. There's no tournaments happening. Then I woke up one day and it was just like fucking Anders and Moses going, yeah, we're here at the fucking, we're calling out from the future or whatever the fuck it was called. I was like, I didn't even know this fucking tournament was happening, honestly.
Do you want to know what's mad? A lot of people didn't notice this. This tournament had a prize pool of $617,000. Last place it wins you 25,000 euros. First place, 200,000 euros.
Mm. Where?
I mean, it was intimated that this is in some way tied to political concerns, like maybe some of this is government money or something, because apparently it's like an election year there. I know they actually had some sort of political speech at the tournament itself. I didn't listen, obviously, it was in English, so would have been no point. And I was off fucking not refreshing the internet and going, what time's my flight again?
I love it as well. And now a luminary from the Hungarian government here to talk to all of our esports. Mate, can you get the that fucking internet working?
Well, fuck, might as well play games. Can't even open Skype.
Two words for you, brother. Broadband. I'm going to say broadband. So, anyway, let's talk about the tournament, because it was, like you say, it was kind of a tier two tournament, but then there was some very much tier one teams that went in attendance, and there was some interesting sort of storylines that came out of this tournament. And I suppose we'll talk about Virtus Pro to begin with. Now, for a change, we're going to talk about Virtus Pro, and it's not doom and gloom. It's not all doom and gloom. At least they made the finals. They made the finals of a tournament, and sure, there weren't a lot of good teams to beat there. But when I saw them in a group with fucking Extatus and XCOM, I was like, well, which one of them is going to fucking wreck Virtus Pro and take their position? Because that's how fucking bad Virtus Pro are.
They lost the map to one of them, mate.
Yeah, I know, right? I was like, yeah, well, here we go again. I was watching, it was only like 4 or 5 o'clock, so I was like just in fucking bed with a laptop on my chest, like only half taking it in. But here's what I'll say about Virtus Pro. We'll just talk about their tournament run in general, making it to the finals. They took a map off Mousesport. You got to say, on this evidence, the premise that players like Mihu and these second string Polish players would never be ready and could never step up looks like really faulty fucking wisdom, because Mihu was undoubtedly, I mean, again, I know traditionally we give MVPs to a player who plays on the team that wins the whole tournament. There is no doubt for me, Mihu's individual level of performance elevated the whole of Virtus Pro. He pretty much single-handedly got them to where they were. He beasted FaZe, looked like the star player on that server more than anyone. And keep in mind, that first map was on Cash, FaZe's best map, 16-14, a narrow win. Mihu mattered. So, I don't think the problem's over for Virtus Pro. Neo won a lot of 1v1s, but statistically was poor, so I don't really know how to assess his performance. Snax just still continues to look like a shadow of himself, ultimately, when challenged by top-tier opposition. But Mihu looked very, very good, and this is the best Virtus Pro have looked in a long time. Bialy was back to doing Bialy things. Pasha had a good tournament, despite being a little bit under the weather. So what did you make of it all for Virtus Pro? Have they actually turned a corner, or is this just one of those, you know, it flatters to deceive?
Right. The depressing thing about this is that it's one of those scenarios where even in this run, which is obviously like one of the best runs they've had in a while, there was the seeds of absolute despair and destruction. Because as I said, they lost to the Extatus team on a map. And then against the other Polish team, XCOM, they were actually in position on one of their maps to just fucking lose another map, which I think would have put them in position to potentially not make the playoffs. So they were looking in real bad shape at one point in time. But when they played Mousesport, they got absolutely rinsed on Nuke. They got 16-1'd. And so all these factors combined, and by the way, this is all with Mihu going completely ham, just entry fragging like an absolute monster. So the fact that it took that to get them to the playoffs. Then in the playoffs, yes, they beat FaZe, but actually pretty close. Like, this was like all the way around close. Could have been three maps, absolutely. Could have been 2-0 FaZe. It was one of those series, you know, again, with Mihu going completely ham. Again, this is one of those rare performances where actually that it's, you know, sometimes you're like, is this number overblown? It's the other way around. The number can't show the impact the guy had because he was entry fragging all the time. So he was just opening up rounds against some of the best players in the world, giving you the opportunity to then come and have a Neo win a 1v1 that otherwise he was going to have no contribution on the game. So when you consider all it took to get them to position, and then obviously they almost did win the tournament. Okay, on one level, you want to go, cool, this is a new player. But to me, that's what's worrying. If it takes like a career-best performance for Mihu to do that, I can't really buy it's going to happen more often. With that said, though, the upside is this. First of all, they almost did win the tournament. And secondly, this is the really key part. You now know one part of the team that absolutely works. You know that right now, the future of Virtus Pro involves Mihu being your entry fragger and being really good. So go about figuring out what other parts you need to fix to make that still work, but improve some other area. Because I still think they're like one player away from actually being a legit good team. And I'm still not sure which one it is. I'll give you a fair play on that one. It's tough to riddle out who you should kick. It's a tough one. But yeah. This part's fixed now. We've got something you haven't had in a long time. So let's work on the other part, I say.
Yeah, well, I mean, I saw that you you put a tweet out today. And obviously, I know we don't like to spend all of the show talking about things we tweeted because you can just go look at our Twitter. But you were talking about the snacks situation. So I don't know, for the benefit of the podcast, if there's something you want to clarify with that.
Oh, I'll tell you the basic story. So what happened was, at the tournament, when we were doing one of the group stage games, I think it might actually have been XCOM against Virtus Pro. No, it was Xstatus against Virtus Pro, which is actually the first match I did at the tournament. It was me and Yanko on the desk, and then we did a run-through of, they had these little videos, which were quite funny, actually. They did these videos where they asked each of the players in the teams what their role was. So a lot of the players just said the real role, you know, in-game leader, whatever. And then what would happen is, you were allowed, if you wanted to just make a fun joke. So, for example, Bialy said PUBG player, which is hilarious. Like, what a great self-deprecating joke, right? Whereas Snacks, what he said was, again, also as a joke, and it was vaguely funny, he said Ronaldinho of CS, right? So my joke was, I think it's a pretty obvious joke, I just go, yeah. Does he mean, Yanko, that he's the Ronaldinho of CS? Because he used to be good about 3 or 4 years ago, but he should also retire now.
Yeah.
Like again, if you can't tell that's a joke, fair play to Snacks. Doesn't have the strongest English language skills. I'll assume maybe he just doesn't know what people's body language is like. Mm. But anyone who understands English should be pretty clear that that's a joke. That's not a serious point, right? Yeah. So for whatever reason, Snacks took like personal umbrage.
Yeah, he did a tweet saying that his cat knows
what it was on his personal Facebook. Yeah. And by the way, I will say, your personal Facebook is exactly where you should make these sorts of comments. It's your space. If you want to talk with your fans, that's cool. But since he did make it, you have to understand, we do now live in a world where I don't hunt down Snacks' personal Facebook page, but people are going to come and tell me, aren't they, that he said that. So since he said it, I actually thought, again, this is always my response, let's make it into a fun thing. Let's not make this a serious matter. I didn't just go, you are a fat cunt. I went, no, you are. I took it as a line. And I thought, who gives a fuck? What is he? Call a dead man dead is no insult. What, are you going to pretend this motherfucker gets on a scale and it goes, yeah, healthy BMI. On your way, sir. No, they don't, Jimmy. They go, have you tried a salad recently? Exactly.
You're off the fucking chain, you.
Anyway, don't know why I was getting sorted by facts. So anyway, I just made a joke and I said, well, you know, no wonder he's been playing like a pussy if that's who he talks to him about CS. Because he said, you know, his cat knows as much about CS. Yeah. And then I also had another good one where I said, because this is actually straight fire, which you've got to give me credit for this, because he just got 16-1 by Mouse Sports. I said, you would have thought his cat could give him some advice on not getting humiliated by a mouse. That's straight fire.
That is straight fire. I'll give
not
you
bad,
that,
right? Man. Not bad. But obviously, as you'd expect with CS players, aka the most entitled people outside of the fucking royalty of like the great houses of Europe 3 centuries ago, he took offense to that as well. And so then he made some comment on stream or something where he was just like, well, first of all, hilariously, Rich, you know the term projection, right? He was implying that by mentioning his tweet, maybe I'm butthurt. So you can diagnose that in other people, can you? Why don't you just say I'm a bit overweight as well? Fuck it, just go hog wild, right? Fuck, you know, can't handle these motherfuckers. Why are they like this?
I mean, at the end of the day, I wanted you to talk about it because I think it's like, oh, it's one
also,
of those
things. I forgot to say, he also then literally thinks that I was seriously saying he should retire.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, as usual, if you ever say, well, I was joking, the sort of idiot fan that doesn't know jokes goes, well, I was supposed to know it was a joke. I'm out.
I've just compared fucking Polish Counter-Strike player to fucking Ronaldinho. Like, you can see immediately there's a premise for absurdity here. Like,
while laughing and making it obvious, doing that fucking face that triggers you all out of the oblivion.
The little... but yeah, I wanted you to talk about it on the podcast because obviously we don't think Snacks needs to retire. He needs to step the fuck up, but he doesn't need to retire.
Do you want to know something hilarious, Rich? And what? If people think about it, this will absolutely line up, right? Mm. So there's been so many times in the last few years when Virtus Pro was slumping that if I wanted to, I could have gone balls deep on these motherfuckers and just been like, fuck them, why, you know, they're stopping the younger talent, or I could have just made loads of jokes about them being shit because at times they were shit, right? I didn't make that many. And what's funny is I actually had a player, I won't say which one, from Virtus Pro come up to me maybe a year ago and say, why don't you ever say bad things about us? And I was like, well, that's got to be the weirdest fucking compliment I've ever heard in my life, but okay. And then he goes, no, but you know, even when we do badly, you don't talk shit. And I actually told him that's because with your team in the past, I understood because he kept the same lineup together. You can't have the expectation you'll be the best team. Also, I respected the fact that you did find solutions to these problems and come back to the top. And I was always one of the people who was bigging up that Virtus Pro could do this, etc. But in this scenario, I will also say, if you want another reason why, member X of Virtus Pro that I will not mention, another reason why I didn't talk a lot of shit on Virtus Pro is Virtus Pro never talked shit to me. They were never antagonistic. If you do that, I mean, here's the thing. If you call Zero and he talks shit to me, I probably can't banter too much because you are pretty wicked at the game. But if you're some player who's in a slump and he talks shit to me, well, guess what? If you don't enjoy people talking shit, you've just signed up for a fucking year's subscription to this shit, haven't you? So you best be on your P's and Q's.
So what do you make of it then overall? Like Virtus Pro, obviously moving forward, Mihu, a good pickup, but do they still need to make, because I still think we're living in La La Land if we think Neo is ever going to be like a force in Counter-Strike again.
It's not going to happen, mate. As I've said before, the most depressing thing about him is he puts in the hours and he actually studies the game. So if you can't get out of it in that point in time, like there's no solution, is it? There's players that are not motivated who just need to play. He's not one of them, so I don't know what the solution is. And on top of it, right, normally you'd go with the logic of how could you kick him as the in-game leader? He's not exactly killing it at that role, is he? Come on, be real. So I even think at this point, the problem is, I will say this, I don't know the Polish scene in terms of in-game leaders. Like, I believe the guy who's in that AGO team is who people say is like a decent in-game leader, a fairly new guy. I'll see if I can find who it is.
Sure.
People said that like he's someone, see, it says here Furlan, but I don't think that's who it is. I think it's maybe the guy called like T-O-A-O. I think it's maybe him, but whoever, yes, it says he's the in-game leader here. So maybe you take a chance on someone like him. Cause to me, as I said, me, he was already shown he's got fucking mustard. And if anything, hasn't that proven the formula that you take? Because by the way, he used to go to tier two lands and he didn't just dominate, but you put him in a really good team or players who have been really good and maybe you can elevate him. So I'd be gambling on younger talent personally.
Okay, so let's talk about the other sort of big storyline, which is obviously linked to Virtus Pro. It's FaZe's flop. And FaZe, you know, we said, are we at the stage now where we need to say FaZe have a winning problem? They dominate their group. They get the favorable seed and miss Mousesports in the semis. So they're playing Virtus Pro. Even with Mihu, even performing at the level they performed at this tournament, this should be free passage to the final for FaZe. This is the super team. It's meant to be the FaZe era. Never really launched, did it that? And really just, I watched that best of three and I was like, okay, it's cash. That's a win. No problem there. And then, what was the second map in the series?
Nuke,
that was it. And again, you think, FaZe can do a number on this. You know, there's nothing to suggest Virtus Pro are going to fucking dominate on that map. So, really strange to lose 2-0 that you don't get a fucking actual, at least a third map on this one, because cash should have been locked down for FaZe. It's statistically the map that they win most on at the moment. So what the fuck is going on? Because this was just, you know, they battled back from behind to even get 14 rounds. It looked like Virtus Pro were going to choke in the first map, but Virtus Pro were at 14-9 before they eked out 16-14. So what is going on with FaZe? Because this isn't even a loss in a final.
No.
This is a semi-final now.
This was easily the worst of all the losses they've had. In some of the other losses, you know, they were round away or some factor. In this one, they lost to a much worse team, and it's the way they lost. Like, the circumstances are unacceptable to me. Because first of all, right, when you look at the series, okay, the third map would have been Mirage. And actually, on paper, Mirage is probably their best map. And it's actually not a great map for VP. So you might think to yourself, oh, why don't they pick Mirage? Well, that's the whole point. Because VP's not a top team. What FaZe is doing is, right, well, the map we've been working on the most recently is Cash. We're trying to get it so that we're like killers on that map. VP doesn't like Cash. So obviously we pick that, we win that. Then you know what? They're going to pick Nuke. Actually, we're pretty decent on that too. We have a chance to win there. Push comes to shove. You know what? We've got our best map as the third map anyway. Yeah. Basically, how can we lose? And in this scenario, you've gotten 2-0'd. And it's not even as all. By the way, the same Virtus Pro were the ones who got 16-1'd on Nuke themselves by Mouse Sports, yeah, who's outrageously good on that map at the moment. So you add that up, that's already really worrying. Then you look at the way they lost. They were losing every pistol. I think they only won the last pistol of the match. They're losing all the pistols. Virtus Pro was getting like 7-0 leads at the beginning of every half. Well, think about one of the biggest strengths FaZe has had. Amazing front runners. Normally, it's the other way around. They front run, and then they start to give up the lead once they're in dominant position. So they were doing that. They would fight their way back into it. They would win some gun rounds, but then they would just lose all the clutch rounds, and then they would lose the map in that way. So I have to say, not only were all the factors for how they normally win not present here, but on top of that, the way they kept going down at the beginning of all the maps, like, I actually get the feeling that something's fucked with the atmosphere in this team. Like, I actually feel like this is a team where if they don't want to do it, some people at least must be at least thinking like, oh, there's got to be a roster move or you know what, with that SK thing, maybe I should have taken that fucking move to SK now, whichever of the two players I might be who were offered, you know, like at this point in time, this is the problem. Part of you wants to say you did win 3 titles and you're raking in prize money. You're fucking killing it. Are you even number one rated still? Because no one else can actually win enough to outplace you. But I have to look at it the other way at this point in time and go, so let's say, off the top of my head, let's say they've been in, I don't know, 14 semi-finals. Suddenly 3 titles doesn't seem very good anymore. If anything, it shows that you actually lose the majority of the time.
So I'm going to present a theory to you here, Duncan, okay. I'm going to use history to sort of back up the theory. And I've talked about this a lot. Carrigan's strengths are that he is a very good man manager. Okay, like this is when it comes to handling egos,
yep,
making people get along, doing conflict resolution, making people feel good. He is a master at all of those social skills. Carrigan is an incredibly smart person. He's a very successful person outside of the game. Has a lot going for him in life, and I think it's very easy to see how he can be a charismatic leader in that sense. I think what has probably been overplayed is, despite how smart he is and how tactical he is, actually he's not. You know, if we were playing top trumps, Carrigan isn't a 10 for tactics.
Oh, no,
he might not even be a 9. You know, yeah. Fallen certainly, I would give the high marks. Carrigan, I'm going to put some around about a 7 or 8. And actually, that's still very good when you add all of his other attributes to it. But let's go back. Let's talk about the Danish team he used to be in back when it was TSM and what started happening in that team to see him removed eventually when it was Astralis and Glaive came in. What happened was those star players that believed in him and believed in his fucking vision for the team and felt good about themselves and were like, oh, wow, it's great playing with Carrigan's team. He never gets angry. You know, he gives us the positions we want. He's willing to put himself in negative positions so we all shine. We love that. We feel good about that. But when that's happening and everyone's playing well and you feel good, that's when you're supposed to be winning. And then when you don't win,
yes,
people start going, well, hang on, look, we're losing. You're the in-game leader. You need to fix that and tell us why we're losing. And Carrigan goes, well, I got these ideas, and maybe we can do this, this, this. And they go, oh, thank God. You've got a plan, Carrigan. Thank fuck for that. And then they go into another tournament, and Carrigan's plan doesn't work. And they go, right, well, that didn't work, Carrigan. So what's your other plan? And he goes, all right, well, I suppose we can try plan C, and they try that, and then that doesn't work. And then he goes, guys, I'm all out of plans, but let's just keep playing, and it's going to work. And that is where those star players go, you know what, he always was a bit of a cunt, wasn't he, Carrigan? And out he goes. And because they, it's almost at that moment like the Emperor has no clothes. Can he tactically get us to where we need to be? And certainly those Danish players didn't think so. And I think it's happening again in phase. I think it is happening again in phase. I am watching history repeat itself. I think these star players are literally looking to the in-game leader going, we're all fucking straight fire. We are like the best players in the fucking world. You even have Rain right now, who is like playing out of his skin. That wasn't supposed to happen, by the way. Rain is supposed to be like the make weight player in the team, you know, just the guy who's there as a legacy fucking cost. You've got Guardian, you got Olaf Meister, you got Nico. We're all playing lights out, but we're still losing games. Carrigan, what's up with that? And I think if a lot of people are saying they'll drop Olaf Meister, I don't know if that happens first. I still could see that happening in the future, but I think if anybody goes, I think it's Carrigan that goes. I honestly do. And I think in my mind, I think we're getting to that point now where these star players are going to make a power play to bring in another in-game leader that they have more confidence in, as happened to him in Astralis. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, here's the thing. When you compare the two teams together, I definitely agree with the fact that, like, here's the problem. This actually happens, obviously, in sports. It's what you call a player's coach. It's someone who goes, I understand you guys. I know what you want. Guess what? That is fucking music to a star player's ears. Yep. So what happens is all these players come along, get into a Carrigan team, and they go, oh, fucking hell, he gets me. It's not like all those other guys telling me, you know, I had to play more restrained, or I had to follow after the flashback. He's telling, and even more, that's what he's selling them on. He's going, listen, I know how your players, I'm going to put you in these spots you like. And you know what? On this other map, it's going to be your turn now. You're going to do this, and you do that. And the problem with that is, this is where pro players can be just little rats sometimes, is that they love that when it's working. And you know what? They're such little rats. They'll take the credit and go, yeah, well, he allows me to be the best player I can be. So they sort of are like, that's me who did all that. And then when they start losing, they go, why have I got all this responsibility? This is, you should be telling me what to do. They're total rats in that sense, you know. So unfortunately, this is the downside of having a team full of star player egos, is that guess what? They're going to, when there's too many people like that, they're going to start looking around for fucking El Capitani, aren't they? Ooh, get the knives out, lads. Well, obviously, we're all fine. None of us could be the problem. And I have to say, I think that I agree with you. If there's a move that's obvious that to happen, it's if they can figure out a way to get another in-game leader they like into this team. Rumors were, by the way, that they already tried to get Shocks when they heard about this. So if they can get another in-game leader, I could see them doing it. But I'll tell you this, I'll make a bold prediction. If they keep the same four players, but bring in any other in-game leader, I think they'll be worse. I think it'll be a worse team, because the difference is they might think they want a tactical team. Which one of you wants to be the guy who waits, runs in blind, and then trusts that someone trades off for him and doesn't get a kill in that round? Which one of you wants to do that, by the way? I don't think many of you do. I mean, here's what's hilarious, Rich. When they did that little video I've referred to with Virtus Pro, where you say your role, each of them said their role, right? Do you want to know what's hilarious? Like, so they got to Nico. Nico goes, lurker. They got to a bunch of them, right? They got to, like, Olaf Meister. Olaf Meister also said he was a lurker. Like, when they were running through the teams, I was going, where's the entry fraggers? But wait a minute, you both think you're the lurker. But Ann Kerrigan's in the team. We know he's not going first. So how's that work then? I think you've just solved the fucking problem right there, haven't I?
Well, I mean, so this is the other issue. I heard the Shocks rumors as well. And I didn't know how much credence to give them, because, I mean,
I haven't heard it. It's like, it definitely can happen. Yeah. It's the sort of thing that you hear passed around. You
know? Yeah, yeah. It got passed around that they were, you know, the players were interested in maybe exploring the option, shall we say. He was very toned down language. But again, if we're doing the top Trumps analogy, if someone like Fallen is like a fucking 9 or a 10 for tactics, and someone like Carrigan is a 7 or 8, I don't know where the fuck I put Shocks on that fucking
5.
Scale. Mate, that's so generous. It's that is the most generous I have ever seen you be, motherfucker. That is so... he's a fucking 3,
oh,
man.
By the way, here's the thing to say as well. Yeah. In line with the Virtus Pro argument, I'm not buying that it's only Carrigan that's the problem here. Come on, guys. Like, there's a lot of players who are full of shit. Like, listen, Nico, I saw you playing with Dennis and Spiddy in hard carrying all these games. Where are you at, mate? Like, there's games where you're just pieced out. Now, I know that there is a psychological component in a team where when you know there are other people who can do it, you don't have the same laser focus. The sick thing about being a simple in Na'Vi now or Nico in the old now spots is because you sort of know you have to go off to win the game. In a mad way, it makes you have like fucking one-pointed awareness, like, well, I can't do anything wrong, I've got to be on. Whereas what's mad is when you know you've got a load of talent around you, in a weird way you do kind of feel like, I'm just not feeling it this game, and you actually think that you might still win the game. But with all that said, I don't buy that, like, you know, the only problem here is carrying it and everyone else is nailing it. I wouldn't claim to know where the issue is because it's another one of those nightmare rosters where it's like everyone can justify their spot. But somewhat's not working, is it?
Yeah. But I'm at a loss to explain what it could be. But, like, here's what I do know as well. We've talked about brutal cuts and stuff. FaZe, I can't see the organization standing by and kind of allowing this. This is an organization that when they got into CSGO, they were like, look, we just want popular players, that's fine. And they picked up the side that was at Kingwin.
G2,
sorry, my bad. And they were like, listen, we've got all these popular players now. And the team didn't really work, and it overpunched at Collusion of Poker. But then they started replacing the bits, and every time they replaced bits, they fucking spent big. And they've continually done that, and they put together this all-star team. And this is when, like, trophies should just be so easy to come by, especially one like this. Like, can you imagine at the start of the year saying there is going to be a tournament with this amount of prize money, and all FaZe have to do to win it is beat two unknowns in the groups, then Virtus Pro, 2018 Virtus Pro, and then Mouseports. That's it. That's all you have to do to win a trophy, and they can't do it, and they don't even get to the final. There is something fundamentally wrong with that, and I'm not smart enough to fucking figure out what it is, but I do know that clearly not all is well within the team, and I think there will be a power play soon. I absolutely cannot see the players keeping confidence in an in-game leader now, and you know when you see those joke tweets that the players make, like I saw Carrigan going like, you know, we turn up, the winning begins, and then we get to the final, and that's when it ends, or something like along those lines. And a few of the players sort of also made jokes at that.
That's Gallows humor, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a sick desperation in that.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, you don't need to be an armchair psychologist to know, yeah, this is tearing you up a little bit inside. Like, you are aware of the problem. And if you're aware of the fucking problem and you're going into a final being hyper aware of the problem, it is going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy more often than not.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Think how many times in sports. Yeah. Think how many fucking NFL quarterbacks, oh, you can't win the big game. That guy gets tortured his whole fucking career. It always happens, doesn't it?
Tony fucking Romo. Do you know what I mean? Like, the first couple of times it happens, people go, can he get it done on the big day? And then you get all the Colin Cowherds and the fucking Skip Baylesses and the Stephen Smiths and all the other motherfuckers just asking the questions like what we do on this podcast. And then it's on the forums and it's on Twitter and it's on the internet. And then you think, right, this fucking playoff, I'm going to get it done. Fuck you. Fuck the haters. But life ain't a fucking Disney movie.
Nope, that's the sad part, isn't it?
We're not watching Mighty Ducks or fucking Air Bud. We are watching real life, and some people will fail continuously at the same hurdle again and again and again and again, and it is fucking inevitable that there will be people who cannot step up.
Here's the key for me, Rich, because, like, in line with what you're saying here, it's one thing, okay, right? Okay, so I'll give you a great example of this. Is like, let's say, like with FaZe, okay, where they lost to SK a bunch of times. That's fine. SK is so amazing that, if anything, the way I'll give you a break there is I'll go, gosh, imagine if you didn't play in anyone with SK, maybe you'd be good. Like, the same thing actually happened, if you ever saw, with the fucking Peyton Manning's career, because he always used to run into the Patriots when they were winning the title all early on. So initially, you could actually give him a break because you could go, he's playing the Patriots. Problem is, he then had the same problems against any team. You know, it'd be a wild card match where he was the favourite and he'd lose. It's the same thing for Carrigan now. If fuck SK, it's got nothing to do with it. They're not even in the tournaments, mate. You're losing to Virtus Pro, Fnatic. At this point, it's like, who wouldn't you lose to if you got to the final? You have to start asking that question, right?
Yeah, exactly. And like I say, once that, like, when it starts to become a reality instead of just a joke, like, you know, I talked to Carrigan, like, he's a cool dude, and he said, like, sometimes you just know it isn't going to happen, and it's and I almost admire that at times. It's a way to shrug off a loss, and you can say to the players, ah, it just wasn't our day, was it, today? Yeah. Don't worry about it. We'll get them next time. But then it's fucking crucial you do get them next time. Or it becomes this mad cursed cycle where, ah, just wasn't, well, when the fuck are we going to have a day?
No joke. I'm not exaggerating it, because I realize everyone will think you can, like, people do this analysis. I do it myself sometimes. The problem is you take too robotic a view. Like, you take every match as if it was in isolation. No, every single match actually informs the match that comes after it in history. So no joke. If the guys from, FaZe win that one round at the major where they run into the B site and Stewie 2K kills three people with the orb. If they win that one round and win the game, I think they might have just gotten over all this. They'd have had a major under their belt. You know what? At that point in time, when they get into a tough situation, they think, hey, remember that time we were in the major, we came through in the tough situation? We don't have a problem with choking. That one thing could have turned it all around. That's the way psychological stuff works. But unfortunately, now we've just compounded all these losses. So now even the ones in the team, I mean, by the way, this happened in the fucking old Astralis team. I've told you the story before. Device used to literally get triggered that I would say he choked, right? And be like, it's not true. Like, you know, I played all right still. And, you know, besides, I'm not the only star player in this team and other people are supposed to. And I would say, listen, you're right on all that stuff if you want to just be a good player. But if you want to be the best player ever, you have to understand you can do things in this team other people can't do. It's not good enough for you to have an okay game. Guess what? If you fail five times in a row, eventually you have to ask yourself, is there something about me that I'm not doing right? And what's funny is, it's only funny enough when he actually started to get over it, when he would finally be like, you know what, I guess there was something to that, like, I did have to work on psychological stuff. And so unfortunately it takes some players a long time to actually just sort of admit it to themselves, because obviously you don't want to. It's basically your worst fear come true, because the last thing any fucking man wants to say is sort of, yeah, guess what, I psychologically beat myself every time. That, unfortunately, in our culture, it sounds like you're a loser if you say that. You know, Wes, these are obviously amazing players, some of the best we've ever had. It's like I said, I think I said this to you on a past episode. You think of players like Guardian and fucking all of my, these players were so clutch in their old teams, even they're having these problems, because there's something about the atmosphere of the team that seeps out into everyone.
Well, I think it's interesting you bring that up, actually, because one of the prescribed wisdoms on Reddit, which we know is actually, well, listen, it's the place, if you want informed discussion, about Counter-Strike, obviously you go to Reddit. I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and be silly and say you go to HLTV, because you definitely don't do that. But you know, Reddit has some geniuses that post over there. And the prescribed wisdom of what FaZe need is, they need a sports psychologist, Duncan. That's all they need.
You know what I love about that, by the way?
Yeah, go on.
Right. Who's the most famous sports psychologist in CSGO?
Are we going to say who I think we are?
She works for Astralis, right? Finnish
one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Astralis been losing a lot of fucking semis and finals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Also, right, remember when we were just talking about Tony Romo, Peyton Manning? Mm-hmm. Apparently they weren't aware sports psychologists exist. But you know the sports world's never found them. You know the term sports psychology. If it worked every time, these fuckers would have bought one, wouldn't they? If I have a $100 million quarterback, you think I'm not having someone sit down with him and go, did anyone ever touch your dick when you were seven? Like, I'm obviously doing something other to get this cunt to try and win. The point with that is, I once heard it described, right, that like with Freudian psychoanalysis, it's not that it doesn't work, right? And it's not that it works. Someone once did a study and they found that it works. 33% of the people get better, 33% of the people get worse, and 33% of the people stay the same. So the point there, right, is not that Freudian psychology does or doesn't work. It's that you've got to find out if you're the 33% that it works, or if it does, go hog wild. If it doesn't, try something else. If you're in the middle, you're gambling. So it's like that with sports psychology. Like, I always think this, even if it works on one player in the team, doesn't mean it works on the other people. Everyone's different, you know. So that is, I see what they're doing there, right? Obviously, it's something to look into. I have to say, I don't know if FaZe has ever done it, but the idea that it's some panacea is such a ludicrous concept.
Yeah, I've said this a bunch, and it's like you say, if it worked for everybody, then it would just be mandatory.
It'd be the worst kept secret in the world, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and the Astralis sports psychologist, her name is Mia Stelberg. So I just quickly looked that up. I didn't know it off the top of my head. Shame on me, but credit where it's due. But look, so let's talk about this fucking sports psychology thing. I've got to say, I do think there's a lot of certainly in esports at least, there is a snake oil like quality to how it is peddled. How, like you say, it is a panacea for all ills.
Oh, I know what you mean. You thought I was going to say welding, right?
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, by the way, as a very quick aside, perfect analogy. Because here's the thing that Weldon did, right? Is he was the sports psychologist for every motherfucking team in the world. And by being the sports psychologist for every motherfucking team in the world, everyone just mentions the ones he was on that were really good. And all the ones that did shit and didn't do anything and didn't stay out of the bottom of the league, everyone just doesn't know that he was the sports psychologist for those teams. It's almost like he fucking did. A fair play to him. He killed it with marketing, obviously, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, what I will say is, like, I was immediately dubious of his qualities as a sports psychologist. Because, sure, he has all the qualifications. He studied. Yeah. Well, actually, he doesn't have the qualifications.
He always says he's a sports psychology trainer. Even he says that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he's not actually a sports psychologist. He's a sports psychology trainer. I must be clear about that. But you know, he's been to university and studied things. So that, so there's that.
Loads of people in the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's doing better than most people in esports immediately. Now, isn't he,
half
right?
The stream can apply for this.
Yeah, right. But here's the problem. He publicly has stated on more than one occasion he doesn't believe in the existence of talent.
So,
yes, you're right. He has. He said that, yeah.
And this is insane to me, Duncan.
Well, here's the problem with that, Richard. That just ties back into the marketing and the snake oil salesman. So what he's saying is anyone could be trained to be the best. Of course, you know who's into training. Me. So, yeah, obviously, mate. All I'm going to tell you is this.
A day.
But like, it's always been like, certainly I looked up to this because I thought, oh, that's an interesting theory. Yeah. And I read up on it at the time. I was going to do a video because this is when he was obviously in League of Legends.
So tenuous, wasn't it? Yeah, I've read some of this shit.
Yeah, I was going to do a video on it, but then I thought, oh, well, it can't go on the League of Legends subreddit, so what's the point? No one will see it, so fuck that noise. So I didn't do it, but I read up on it. I did read quite extensively, and it's like, that just isn't the science at all.
From what of it, like, I believe, Richard, I believe he even cited a study, which when I read the study, he'd like taken the wrong conclusion from the study. Like even the study sort of later on didn't say what he claimed it did. That sort of scenario, you know.
Well, so there was this, let me see if I can find it. So what was that book that came out? What was the number of hours you had to practice?
It was called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. It was 10,000 hours to become a master. By the way, this is a great topic to open right here because everyone in the world is a pleb. Everyone's just heard stories, right? No one's investigated it. So everyone always cites this stat, Rich, as like 10,000 hours. What they don't know is, again, Malcolm Gladwell, not a sports psychologist. He is a fucking journalist who got interested in the topic, investigated it for, I don't know, let's say 2 years, I'll just guess, and then wrote a book on it and did that classic thing that people do, which is because he's a journalist, he looked for what he thought was an interesting line of reasoning and made a book out of it. It's a bit like when someone finds a study that says, you know, when we put a bit of nicotine into a rat's ball, it, you know, like it didn't get cancer as quickly as we thought it would. But then the newspaper article is, nicotine will cure cancer. You know, like it's like you've sort of taken a grain of truth and just skewed it totally ridiculous. So there's probably, as a model, I think there's probably something to the 10,000 hours. Like you certainly have to obviously do a certain amount until it becomes intuitive. But even that is so misquoted, you know, as if it was like a fact, you know, as if it was some magic golden number they'd hit.
Yeah, and he seemed to he like cited this as if it was like some sort of really hard scientific book, and I was like, so I went away and like read up on it, and I was like, fucking hell, this is actually like, it's like saying The Secret is hard science.
It's that, you know? Sort of level, yeah.
It's like just some fucking disposable, pulpy self-help nonsense. It is not hard science by any stretch of the imagination. The data samples in this are so unbelievably small and so easily disproved with anecdotal evidence.
Yes,
that if these models were fundamentally true, then these things could not exist. So while I think like 10,000 hours to master something might be a great sort of...
it's a good loose sort of concept.
Yeah, exactly. A loose concept that if you do, you will certainly be better at hour 10,000 than you were at hour one. But isn't that the most fucking obvious thing to say ever? So it was really weird to me. And the reason I bring all this up is that it does seem that, you know, people are peddling like, oh, we need more sports psychology. And look, I'm not saying all sports psychology is a wash. I used to be, you know, I've done sports coaching, right? So you learn different like learning styles, how people respond, different motivational techniques, depending on personality archetypes. Like, for example, you know, just to break it down into something really simple, some people will get motivated if you give them the fucking drill sergeant treatment. You know, if you yeah. shout at somebody and say, that's not fucking good enough, you piece of shit, I'm going to pull you off at fucking halftime if you don't raise your game. That anger will motivate them to step it up because they don't want the shame of being... Yeah,
this is actually why when fans try to sort of speculate on whether someone's a toxic teammate or in-game leader, some of them don't realize that not everyone's the same. Like, yep. There's actually some players. Funnily enough, I was like this myself earlier in my career. If I had like a contentious relationship with a boss of mine, sometimes that I actually thought, fuck, I'll prove this cunt doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. And I would actually do better work, if anything. Whereas if he'd have told me, oh, you're just brilliant, you are. I'd have done some of it, but earlier in my career, I might have rested on my laurels, you know.
So one of the things we learned about was like learning styles. It was a long time ago when I did it, but basically you divide people up into like, it was like, you know, the old classic quarter, and it was like, you know, pragmatic, analytical, okay. or, you know, and it had different things. It was a long time ago I did the course, but basically it was literally not only do different personalities respond differently to different motivational techniques, but also just even how you present information
yeah.
will be absorbed in a very different way depending on people's styles. So you have to tailor sessions specifically to the individual. And there's so much to it that I honestly, I would welcome some like elite level actual sports training.
Which is the point, right? Like this is the reason why the Weldon Green example always tilted me, because here's the thing. In the real world, he was obviously fairly low level, which is why, since he liked esports, he did the smart move and pivoted in esports. Because as I've already referenced, even some of the best sports psychology trainers or psychologists in the world couldn't fix the best players in the world in certain cases. That we're not even getting those people in esports, because they're not going to come and work for a fucking $1,000 a day or something, you know. They're on mega books, mate. I mean, think about it. If as I said, if you have the $100 million quarterback, the guy you bring in to be the fucking quarterback whisperer is making god tier money, because if he can actually fix that guy, it's so worth it to your franchise. So in this scenario, yeah, you're not even getting those best people. But admittedly, the best people, I could definitely see lots of different angles they could take, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and I think as well, like, just to wrap up this topic, there's certainly like, so when you talk about sports psychology, I almost want to compare it to like chiropractic medicine in a way, because it's like there's two different types of chiropractor. There's the kind who goes, well, you've got nerve pressure here because your disc is herniated, and if I do a little alignment, it'll relieve some of that pressure and you'll feel better, and it's basic biomechanics. Then you've got people who say, that disc controls your respiratory system. So have you had problems breathing? You know, like these Gonstead holistic quacks, and they do the nervoscope reading on you, and it just detects heat, and they pretend it's like a precision tool. These people are just it's quackery. It's absolute nonsense that they're trying to synthesize a science and make you believers. And what they're doing is they're hoping the placebo kicks in and you start dancing out the fucking, but your back's still absolutely fucked. I mean, Joe Rogan's talking about this. Now, he believed in chiropractic, and he had somebody like trying to fix his fucking neck for ages. And when it got no better and he went to a doctor, they were like, shit, they've actually been making it worse. Like, they've filled your head with utter garbage. So I think, unfortunately, in esports, I see a lot of sports psychologists kind of falling into that, you know, latter category. And I don't think we get the best and the brightest people. I'd be very interested to see what they would have to say about techniques and what they could do with players. But right now, honestly, the idea of, oh, well, FaZe are playing bad, let's ascribe them a sports psychologist. I don't really know if that would make this team any better. And I don't even know if these are the kind of personality archetypes that would respond to that kind of feedback. So
to me, there's also another factor I'll throw in the table here that I think actually makes esports totally different to every other sport. Is that, remember, in other sports, okay, when people go through their career storyline, right? Let's say you are the guy we're describing, you know, the first years, you've clearly got the talent, right? You're good at the game, regular season, but you don't win the big game. You always let them down, right? The ones who make it, who don't just do that their whole career, it might take you 10 years to complete this cycle. And then eventually, you know, I figured out what sort of a teammate I needed and I worked on myself and I did have a sports psychologist. And eventually after the 10 years, you make it. If you come into esports, you might be working with a 20-year-old kid who doesn't even know who he is. Never mind, you're going to figure out who he is and help him. And he might still be growing. He might still be figuring out self-esteem issues. Yeah. So the problem is you've got an even tougher job. In fact, you might have an impossible task with certain players, you know. So if it's that tough and that hit and miss in the real sports world of adult men, 30-year-old athletes who've been doing it 10 years and had real coaching as well their whole life, there's not going to be that many cases. Like for me, if it ever did help Astralis or help certain players, congrats, you caught lightning in a bottle. You got the right person, the right players. Even then, it didn't work all the time for you. It would be unreasonable to think it would do, you know. It is still a game where the game can decide whether you win or lose. So it's just such a complicated topic. I agree with the idea of trying it, but it's not the end. It's the beginning of the fucking process, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe it's something we can fucking get on, actually. I might see if we can use our sports connections, you know, since it's me and you have been on television. And
I thought you were going to go, like, maybe we can get in on this, right? What we'll do is we'll come in, and then, since people respond differently, we'll do the good cop, bad cop. I'll go in and go, listen, Flamey, you reamed out fucking blob of fucking, I don't know, something. I don't know the name of anything, whatever. Something from your country. A blob from your country. You are a mess. You'll never be anything in this game. You remember that time you lost that final? You were crying on stage. I wish you were still on stage right now. That's how I feel. And then I go out, and then you come in and go, oh, sorry about that. He's, you know, in the mornings, he's a bit cranky. Thing is, I've seen what you can do with the game, you know. You get it, you're together, you know, maybe hit the gym. He was a bit right about that, but you know, fuck him. Then again, though, on the right side, you're not snacks. So as long as you're not ghost, you're snacks, fair play.
I've heard you, mate. Well, we talked about this last time, and you were going, oh, I'd love to be a fucking coach, me. I'd be reading them the fucking riot at me. Like, blah, blah, blah. So no, we're definitely not getting in there. What I was going to say is maybe we can see if we can get, like, some sports psychologist's time, an actual real credible one, and just ask if they have any thoughts about esports stuff, because I'm sure there must be one out there who is aware it exists.
Sadly, they all are there. They're all just going to those fucking conferences we don't go to because we actually have a job in esports and aren't 24/7 shills.
Yeah, there is that. We need to start shilling more. So let's talk about the final of this tournament in Budapest. So Mouse Sports won it, spoilers. Yes. Won it 2-1 against Virtus Pro. Talked a lot about the development of this Mouse Sports team, and it really continues to impress. Just a sort of crazy culmination. Now, yes, is this a super prestigious tournament? Definitely not. But what we've seen is this constant development of Mouse Sports that when we start talking about the late stages of tournament play, the quarterfinals, semifinals, and final, Mouse Sports are always in there. They're always in contention. And more often than not, they're getting very deep runs. They made it to some finals. You know, they had that face it one at the end of last year, of course, in Mexico, with last tournament of the year. Amazing final with FaZe, which FaZe just edged them out. And I'm really liking this team. I think they're, for me, comfortably a top five team in Europe. Certainly on HLTV's rankings,
they've got to be fair.
Third. Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that. You know, the HLTV rankings are a little bit hit and miss for me. Like, I definitely don't have Cloud9 at second best team in the world after FaZe. But Mouse Sports have just been brilliant, and I think the way that they've sort of developed this is just kind of a continuation of that. You cannot sleep on this team. So what did you make of them?
The funny thing is, right, so whenever I describe Mouse as the poor man's FaZe, people always took that wrong, because you know what, Rich? Not only do idiots not understand jokes, they don't understand metaphors either. They literally think poor man's means that, like, it's shit and you could only get this team if you're poor. Like, they don't even understand basic idioms, mate. So what I mean by poor man's FaZe is it's like FaZe, but just a slightly worse version, or not as the same standard. Now, that still makes for a very good team, because guess what? As we've discussed already, FaZe, literally every time they don't win a tournament, you go, what the fuck's wrong with them? That's how ridiculous that team is. It is the same with Mouse, but here's the bizarre thing. In a mad way, this shows you how bad the problems are in FaZe, because I don't think Mouse Sports has any player that's as good as their counterpart in FaZe. Like, okay, Oscar's amazing, but if you go with your counterpart in FaZe, you're going to pick the best player in FaZe. You're going to pick, like, Nico or something, you know. So they are, like, a slightly worse version across the board, but they don't have the choking problem. Yeah. So they just play. Guess what? Sometimes they lose a close game. Sometimes they win a close game. They don't seem to have any sort of thread that follows them around or any pattern that haunts them. When they play well, they can beat anyone and win. When they don't play well, yeah, you know what? Maybe they go out in the semis. That's the thing to me. Like, they've got a really nice squad. They do it by committee. Like, even though Oscar might have the MVP numbers, he definitely has games he goes missing, you know? Yeah, because his problem is he's one of those players who isn't like, you know, the thing that always amazed me about Cole Zero was he really did do like the consistency, you know? It was like every game was like 22 frags or something. Oscar's the guy where for the event he'll have the MVP numbers, but that'll be a game where he goes 35 kills and then there'll be a game where he has 9. And the problem is, if it's the wrong game when he has 9, you're going to need someone else to help you in that game. And that's what they have. They have Sonny, they have Robs, they have a nice mixture of talent. And then on the other end of the equation, Christian understands he's not going to win championships as a star player. And he is all in on the idea that he is the in-game leader. Then you look at Sticko, that's the difference between Mouse Sports and FaZe. They have a Sticko. Sticko understands, I am even a mockery in my own team. I must be a support player. That is my only job. But you know what? I can also win championships when I do that. So there's the difference to me. They're actually quite similar teams, but they have a sticker up their arsehole.
Not even going to timestamp that, mate. Not even good. I'm going to let you suffer for that one. Yeah. But yeah, I really, like say, for me, there's a lot of great stories on this team. You know, we've talked about them before. You know, I really like Sonny, which I never thought I would say. I thought when Sonny sort of moved over from Penta, I was like, oh, come the fuck on. But he looked good in Penta, but really, is he going to fucking step up and look good here? Well, of course, his pistol play is so fucking monumental, it wouldn't matter if he didn't do anything the rest of the game. Turns out he can. You've already said about Sticko, who, like, he's just happy to be in the team and sort of just does all the donkey work.
Good attitude.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what you need, right? Every team needs a Sticko, like, for real. And I remember people were fucking spamming my Twitter feed when I said Sticko is an upgrade for Dennis. And they were going, no, he isn't, because he had a bit of a rough start.
Which shows what idiots these people are, isn't it?
Like, you know, no disrespect to Dennis. Like I say, I think he's a great guy. But, you know, he just is a very basic player. He's
a basic bitch.
I didn't say that. You don't speak for me. You know, Sticko is, you know, just a lot more adept at the support role. Dennis is just a bit more, you know, sort of mediocre at everything, and doesn't specialize in a support role. So what are you going to do? Chris J., I still think he's one of the best all-round players in Europe. You know, IGL, Rifle, AWP, Scout, you fucking name it. I think he's sick. And, of course, then you got two genuine world star players in the form of Robs and Oscar. Oscar blew the fucking doors off this tournament again. Now, he's a weird motherfucker, like, for real.
Oscar, he's one of the strangest people you ever meet, man.
No, seriously, he is a fucking weird motherfucker. Like, no, I'm telling you, people don't even know. Like when we were doing the E-League documentary, right? I was helping story, you know, that Road to the Boston Major, which I didn't get to voice over because I don't have as cool a voice as the dude they got. So we had this. I was like storyboarding and helping the documentary team. You know, you want to be on this story. You want to talk to this player. Da 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 da. You know, helping them with it all and giving them like just a bit extra. So the documentary was good. And anyway, I said, like, I warned him in advance. I was like, listen, Oscar's just a bit of a strange dude. Like, he's already been out of this team once because he's strange. He seems to be a little bit emotional, a little bit highly strung, but also just a little bit kind of antisocial to a certain degree. So, you know, I don't know what you'll get out of him if you put him on camera, but they were like, no, we'll go for it because he's a super sick player, right? He's an amazing player. So we'd love to get him on camera and get his thoughts.
I bet they went out, nothing, right?
Mate, they went out to interview him and he just said, I can't face it. And he just wouldn't come out and talk to them. He just literally said, I am not doing this thing that I have scheduled to do. And for what, I don't know what had happened that day, but he just couldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. And they were like, oh, well, Robs, about your amazing, you know, so they didn't get the stuff from him. So it was like, I've never known what to make of this guy. Because as well, when he will have tournaments like this where he is the dominant force throughout the tournament, but he will also have tournaments where he just isn't that great at all. And you can see he's not happy with himself, doesn't look happy in the team. He is one of the most idiosyncratic players I think we have in Counter-Strike. But amazing when he plays well.
Thing is, though, to me, he's a perfect. Like, this is why I get pissed off where people try to over, because you know there's so many people in esports who are fans, where apparently it's not even about the fact they like a video game. It's some esports has become some sort of weird identifying thing, like I'm a gamer, and it's all about getting the mainstream to accept that you're a normal person and all the validated and all this bullshit. And so part of that is not only do people lie about how big esports is and try and claim, for example, that like Drake playing Fortnite is esports succeeding or whatever the fuck, but they will also try to always sell this bullshit line that every fucker in esports looks like Cage and B or something, or Pasha Biceps, you know, and we're not nerds, what are you talking about? The dumb thing is, it's such a dumb angle to take. You should be going the other way. What you should say is, you know what, you can be like that and do it, so you don't have to be unhealthy. There's a great way to sell it. But the other end of the equation where you would really make, in my opinion, all the money, think about shows like X Factor. They don't want to hear that you had a great life. If you tell them you had a tortured life, and you know what, no one believed in you when you were growing up, and you were going in foster homes, and then you found out you had talent, and you developed your singing voice, and now you're hoping you can turn your life around. Everyone now wants you to fucking succeed, and if you turn out to be good as well, you will be a megastar. This is exact. Someone like Oscar is the sort of story you want to tell, because here's a guy who is a weird fucker. He can't talk to anyone. He's not a social guy. He doesn't even seem to really have any friends even among the pro players, but you put him inside a Counter-Strike server and he can express himself, and he is an incredibly unique player, and he has an amazing talent level, and he comes from a country where he was going to have no career, where his career was done already. I believe he was already like something like 25 when CSGO was around, and that was it. It was over for him. I think he even has a family, but somehow he found his way into the right team, and then he's found a team that works for him, because obviously the Nico squad didn't work for him. Nico wasn't going to put up with that shit. And he somehow backdoored his way at the very end into a team that's winning fucking championships. That's going to be one of the best stories you could sell to the mainstream. Guess what? Even the nerds can make it. That's an awesome story.
For fucking real. And yeah, you know, I don't know what it is. He might not be a fucking nerdlinger, you know, like he might, I don't know what it is. It could be anxiety, you know. That, I mean, I remember Natu telling me about Joel Z, you know, and how he couldn't believe, like, there was this amazing talent, you know, he's smashing everyone on fucking online, and everyone thought he was cheating because they couldn't believe a player would be that good. And then he'd only ever been to like one LAN. It was a small Finnish LAN, like not even an assembly, you know what I mean? Like one of those ridiculous fucking LANs they have where it's just the letter V five times, then U-U-U-T-T-T-K-A. You're like, what the fuck is that? The Finnish language is a mess, by the way. It sounds like the fucking Uruk-hai as they're hatching out of fucking Saruman's pods. But anyway, you know, horrible accent, not easy on the ears. But he told me that, like, he couldn't believe it. Like, when they got him in the house and they were, like, actually trying to work with his player, they were like, this kid's just not ready. Like, he's just not ready to be in the team. He's barely ready to be outside, you know? Like, he's got a long way to go developmentally.
He's like a fucking bubble boy. Just needs to be in his room, sealed in, doesn't he? Like one of those old fucking prisons where you get the food just shoved under the door.
He doesn't have a compromised fucking immune system.
He has a compromised social immune system.
All right, good diagnosis, Dr. Shields. But anyway, so it's like, you know, obviously I'm not saying this to like be disparaging about the kid. I mean, that's not what I'm doing. I'm not trying to fucking make him sound like a, you know, an asshole or whatever. But you know, it just goes to show there's talent out there that on the server, but they'll never necessarily be the complete package in terms of, can they be a professional? Can they do interviews? You know, can they work well with other people on the team? And that to me is the true credit of Mouse Sports, that after he was out of the team, despite all of his idiosyncrasies, they found a way to bring him back. Weird how it happened after Nico went, not saying anything, and can work through having him on the team, even though they know he is like this. That's actually their fucking credit. Oh, that's their greatest achievement.
Even though, as I always say, you can't actually judge people's success based on how much money they have, etc. That doesn't really motivate people. I will just say, Mouse Sports, not a team with loads of money, not a team where people are making mega bucks. This is not a G2 or a Virtus Pro or an SK Gaming. This is up there with, I mean, like I said, the old Cloud9s, the teams that actually punch above their weight when you see how much they get paid. So again, fair play to these players that they're not out there entitled, bitching about not, they just get on with their job. I mean, a lot of them in this team really are rejects. You know, they're people who didn't have anywhere else to go, but they've banded together amazingly without even having like a massive name, and they have become a championship squad. It's basically one of the best feel-good stories I've heard in ages.
Yeah, it maybe is a bit like Mighty Ducks, isn't it? So look, let's start wrapping up the show. I wanted to just go back to the news. That was the V4 Future Sports Festival that we had. But there was one other story, because it was like, it's been a mad week for ESEA again. It's just been so fucking bad.
You know what? They're just the most unlucky people ever, Rich. They're those people, like I alluded to before, about politics. Every mistake they make, they just get rich as fuck.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you. This week for ESEA was just so fucking surreal for me. Like, my fucking social media was blowing up, because everyone knows, like, I do love to go in on ESEA. And I will say this. I will clarify this once and for all. Any company that decides is for the lulz to put fucking malware on your PC to secretly mine Bitcoin and get the money and then try and pass it off as just a bit of banter, wasn't it? Just an April Fool's joke gone wrong, and throw a single employee under the bus when the former owner of ESEA was joking about it before it happened.
Oh, and by the way, I always bring this up because I love facts. And if you ever read through the court document from that court case, there is a line which states that ESEA owners, I believe they even name Elke Kane, or implies it was the ownership, was aware of this employee's actions and that he was not a rogue employee. So all I'm telling you is that's the court's decision. I didn't make that up. That's out there.
Then on top of all of that, right, as if the Bitcoin thing wasn't bad enough, their anti-cheat client was, this is also in court documents. This isn't paranoid fantasy. And I was told this by players and thought, these players have been smoking some bad granola. But they hadn't. They were legit. That there was ESEA admins and higher-ups that were messaging them going, what you've been talking about is bad, da-da-da-da-da, right? And they were reading their Steam chat.
Well, this is also right, Rich. One of the factors before Kaylee and SF got banned, that it was implied that part of the reason ESEA had the best cheat client in the world is they had other ways to find out you were cheating.
Yes, exactly. Fucking right.
Intimated, right?
Yeah, very much so. So they were literally fucking spying on players and reading private chat. Now, when I did that video about Games Academy doing it, motherfuckers were up in arms. People were saying, how the fuck can Fallen endorse this company and take a paycheck from this company when they're doing this to stop cheaters? Now, forget anything. Games Academy are straight motherfuckers as well. But ESEA are the original ones. They're the biggest. They have the market fucking cornered, and they're running this type of fucking game. Meanwhile, you've got that fucking mad outstanding court case with that guy called Mario, who all he did was he bought Google Ads with an ESEA referral link that everyone went to, because it was the first thing that people saw through SEO was his personal referral link. He built up tens of thousands of dollars worth of fucking money, which, by the way, it did not expressly say in the terms of service that he couldn't do it.
Legit. Yeah,
it might be a shitty thing to do. He might have gamed the system, but there was absolutely nothing precluding him from doing it. They edited their terms of service in, and then they turned around and said, yeah, fuck this guy, we're not paying him money. And they offered him a derisory settlement. ESEA does not give a fuck about you, the consumer. It would piss on your dead bodies. It doesn't care. It is like any big company. It doesn't give a flying fuck about you. They talk about community, and they like to enforce community values, but you are just money making. You are just numbers on a spreadsheet. You do not matter to them. They have systematically been trying to fuck you repeatedly, constantly down the years. And people go, yeah, but there just isn't another pugging service. Is toughing out matchmaking so fucking difficult for you that you would let this company bend you over consistently? And now, thank fuck, Face, it's finally expanding into that territory. Please go and support that. It's not a personal endorsement. I got no fucking stake in either fucking organization. But I'm going to show you some stories that happened this week. Just to underline, ESEA do not give a fuck about you, the customer. One of the stories that came out, I mean, that's on top of all of that shit. And they could say, oh, well, LP Kane's not there anymore. And sure, we did use the client to spy on people, but we're not doing that anymore, even though they've actually now made people and pros especially sign up to an anti-cheat that's even more invasive. And the community think this is a good thing, even though they've proven they can't wield it responsibly. But the ESEA, it was on the front page of the subreddit. And
by the way, Rich, think about this for a second. People are losing their shit. I'm deleting my Facebook. You know they have all my data information.
I know.
Yeah. You know when you play a video game, to make sure you're not cheating, and you know you're not cheating anyway, they can just scan everything on your PC.
Yeah. It's
yeah, absolute... well, how else would I play games?
Yeah, exactly. But as long as I have a cheat-free environment, I don't care that someone in an office on the other side of the world is laughing at a fucking video I sent of myself to my girlfriend when I'm jerking off. This is the sort of mad shit that's going on, and you're signing up to it because you think everyone in matchmaking cheats, which is patently unfucking true. That is your motivation for signing away all your privacy, is it?
Now, yeah, they do get all the cheaters, Rich.
Yeah, right. It's mad, isn't it? As if there's never been a cheat that bypasses ESEA as well, by the way. And you pay money for this fucking privilege of having some cunt in an office. Going, have you seen this cunt's thin dick? Look how thin it is. You know what I mean? You'll beat them with that, right? So anyway, you know, just saying. But then, so there was, this is only 3 days ago. ESEA, it was found out that they were double charging everybody. Like just literally,
everyone.
Yeah. So you pay ESEA like a monthly fee,
yeah.
And then what they were doing was they were just taking that fee twice a month.
Derek had a double charge.
Right? Yeah, Derek's had a double charge. And if you look at it, hang on, I'll give you the thread. You can bring up some of the fucking posts people responded to it. It was going on for ages. It's been happening. Since the people are saying possibly 2016 and they haven't even noticed. How do you not notice you've got double the money? You're supposed to. I fucking noticed that, mate. It's mental. Where's your quality control? They put a statement out, of course, the classic ESEA statement. This wasn't a statement where they mocked the disabled as they did when they advertised their anti-cheat. But again, people have just forgotten that that happened as well. This company can't be real, is it? It's like the fucking Trump University. I can't
that was just unreal, wasn't it? And here's our competitors.
Do you know what I mean?
Why is this real?
This is an industry leader in the fucking space, ladies and gentlemen. All right, but anyway, so look, this was, I'll give you the statement, Sam, because I told you, 2018, I don't give a fuck. I just straight don't give a fuck anymore. This has got to stop. This madness has got to stop. These people cannot be just taking millions of pounds out of Counter-Strike, and this is the level of quality they put back in. This was brought to our attention several days ago, and we've been actively investigating this weird issue where we get double the money since. We immediately contacted PayPal's technical team, who we have been working closely with to identify the cause and work to remedy the issue. We have identified that this occurs when the primary payment method used for the subscription is declined. In this case, PayPal will automatically attempt to charge the payment method until it's successful. Sometimes this takes longer than the period we give all ESEA user accounts to submit a payment. Right? So once the grace period is exceeded, ESEA removes the premium insider status of the account and considers the account available for payment again. Unfortunately, in some edge cases, there's hundreds of these on the subreddit. A few edge cases, a few fringe cases. Users authorized an additional recurring payment in an attempt to restore their subscription, which may include the user adding a new payment method or updating their previous payment method in their PayPal account, allowing a successful charge. After doing so, PayPal will eventually continue to charge the original recurring payment, which previously failed, creating duplicate payments. I mean, come on, guys. Please tell me there's someone out there that's just looking at the money that's coming in. Like, at least tell me that's happening. At least tell me you understand. You have a revenue stream. And because the premise of this is ridiculous, that if, like, let's say there was somebody out there just constantly spamming, fucking hell, give me my ESEA. This cheat is in matchmaking everywhere. Get me my ESEA. If they just constantly did that, fuck it. 40 payments could be going out a month. You know, like, what the fuck is that? It's so insane to me as well that this had to go to Reddit and moderators were deleting it off the fucking subreddit.
Classic. You could never get them to delete a thread that was just like, everyone, let's just say, fuck Thorin. And it'd be like the 1,000 comments. They'd be like, well, freedom of speech and that. Like, so it's being robbed.
They did that. So, again, maybe I'm being fucking OTT here and saying, oh, you know, you're being really harsh on ESEA. They're saying, They think only 2% of the users might be experiencing it. I mean, 2% of all users experiencing double charges is pretty fucking bad. Plus, you'll have to go through each account and work out how long it's been going on for and how much you're going to have to issue on refunds. And they haven't even intimated what's going to happen. They just, like, in terms of time frames for when people are going to get their money back, how that's going to look. But anyway, maybe I'm just going overboard because I'm so sick of ESEA dropping the ball fucking consistently. So there we go. That's the end of the show. Sam, do we have our credits here?
Indeed we do, mate.
Beloved patrons.
Questions again, though. So anyone submit a question, you can do it through the Patreon message system. You can tweet it at me. You can put it in the chat. However you want to get it to me, send it on the website if that's for some reason you want to do it. Discord. Because apparently either no one's asked or nobody knows. So
I've actually noticed, by the way, that is actually a thing. So same on my Patreon. The first time you do it, everyone's in there with a question. Eventually, they all just go, I'm not bothered. Yeah, I'll keep paying. Really
nice
which
guys
is like, fair play. Yeah, yes, nice. You're my ideal customer.
So anyway, you know, obviously, Duncan, thanks for popping by. What, are you on the road again? You got any events lined up?
I've got a while off now.
Yeah? What are you going to be doing?
Well, I mean, you know, your boy Sean Gare's taking all my gigs and that, but love him. Love it. Tell you what, I think people have given him short shrift. He should be back on a top team soon. Call this boy up. He needs his way back in the scene.
Yeah, I'll tell you, look, at the end of the day, Duncan, like real talk, when we were doing that analysis, we were only keeping the seats warm.
Obviously, yeah.
For
I'm
ex-pros.
Only joking, by the way. Obviously, it should be Sean Gare's over me.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and like I said, we'll be able to do other stuff. Yeah. You know, you'll have your own little segment, your historian bit. I'll fucking probably get a hosting gig at some point, maybe. You know, if Machine lets me have one without passive-aggressive tweeting.
A lot of little cunts in the scene nowadays. You know. I mean, here's the thing. What I don't like about them, Rich, is you're probably going to think, what, like arrogance? Or something. No, it's the way they just think they're our equals. They just walk in. They don't even kiss the ring, don't bow and scrape and ask not to be destroyed. They just think they can, like, have a job and that and be friends. And I hate it when they call me by my first name when they haven't asked express permission.
Yeah, I know.
That's Mr. Fuck. Thorin to you, you little cunt.
Yeah, you tell him. So anyway, so there you have it. So let's thank the patrons that make the show possible. We've got our $100 patrons, Detlef Insomniac. He pays the most. He is the number one patron. Thank you very much. Dr. Skrilla and Mr. Gay Icon, Chris Enwin, Hyolu, Mateus Pietkowski, and Jerky's Minion. Our $50 patrons, Sodswa, Daniel Plamenov Yordanov, Nastradamus, Marcus Kyunpar, Mama Jama Hennessy, Keith Miller, Carl Oscar Garcia Firm, Benakagi Assassin, and William Southern. There you have it. That was us breaking down all of the news. There'll be some now sick roster news coming in tomorrow, which we'll be breaking down for you, hopefully, at the same time and place next week. Keep watching our Twitter so we can keep you up to date of the times and everything. Thanks to everybody who tuned in, all the people who threw in a book or two. You're going to see your names in just a second. From me, Duncan and Sam, have a very good night. We'll see you next time.